Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabona podcast. Once again, I'm Musa Konga, joined by Ryan Hun. Michael De Silva is indisposed.
He's back next week.
Yeah, he's off doing Rabona's, doing the Lord's work for Rabona.
Doing Rabona's just down the street. Rabona-ing cans around.
But yeah, we've got a lot to talk about this this week, Ryan, so let's get into it. Where should we start?
Oh, no idea. Actually, before we do start, I wanted to just touch on the response to last week's podcast. Like, thanks so much to everyone who got in touch about the podcast on Thursday. We really appreciate it. One thing I wanted to say was shout to Mash St. Paddy, yep, who wrote a piece for the Metro about this topic. And he kind of tweeted us saying that it was inspired by the podcast, which is really kind of touching. I mean, it's weird to kind of feel stuff like this about this kind of topic, if you know what I mean. But yeah, we retweeted it from the Rabona account. So yep, Please go and read it. But also, I just wanted to say one thing. As opposed to taking credit for the podcast, I think that we should look at it as to highlight how this needs to be spoken about more in podcasts,
yeah,
in general.
Yeah.
And there are some amazing podcasts that do that already. Prime example is like Burn It All Down.
Yeah.
They talk about this stuff all the time and inequalities in sport and all kinds of stuff. And it's a really important listen.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, I just wanted to touch on that before we moved on. But thanks to everyone who listened and responded and stuff. And hopefully we'll never have to do another podcast like that.
Yeah, here's hoping.
Yeah, but on to more positive stuff.
Absolutely, let's get into it.
What are we going to talk about today? I felt like I was swimming in football.
Do you know where we should start? Messi.
In a weekend of unbelievable games, I think that was my favourite game this weekend.
Barca Atleti. So Barca win 2-0 and effectively, I mean, it's, as they say in the old cliche, all over by the shouting in La Liga.
Mm.
A 2-0 win and against a very good team. Weirdly enough, actually, I didn't enjoy the game that much. Strange as it may sound. Yeah. Do you know what? I think because I've been working all day and I watched it when I was lying in bed. But there is a sort of grimly familiar pattern to Barca Atleti games, which is why I don't enjoy them so much. There is a predictable format, and I love Atleti, don't get me wrong. It's just that they haven't really mastered the art of doing much more, unfortunately, than soaking up pressure and then having this kind of crossbow counterattack. And I think they've got a bit of an identity crisis right now.
Yeah, I mean, they've had it all season.
Does that make sense? Yeah, and they've never quite, all of the things we were hoping Atleti would do, and I love that club, I love that team, all the things we were hoping they would do, hoping they would integrate Thomas Lemar a lot better, have maybe a better sense of how to play on the front foot, didn't happen. And it's really strange watching them lose this season has been a bit like teams realizing this isn't the Atleti of 2013-14. We're playing them as if they are, but they're not.
Mm.
And it's almost like when people first started poking holes in, sacrilegious to say this, in Guardiola's Barcelona in his final season,
yeah,
when they started noticing, the king is ring rusty.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the game, you know, because it's Barca Atleti, but I also was not, it didn't blow me away as I was hoping it would.
Well, I watched it back on Sunday because I was on my way back from München. And I found it really stressful.
Right.
It was quite a stressful game. It was quite intense and it was just very frantic. And I was thinking watching it, actually, I was like, has this replaced the Clásico now?
Yes.
Because this season, the two Atleti-Barca games have been better than the Clásicos, I think.
That's a fascinating point. What an achievement that has been for Simeone, actually, as a legacy.
Is Real Madrid Twitter going to come after me now?
No, because they don't really come after anyone. Well, let's
They're
going to
come after you now.
They don't really. No, Real Madrid Twitter is funny for a club as combative and which has much internal politics. Real Madrid on Twitter, actually fairly sanguine bunch. They don't really go for you.
I don't want to test them.
Yeah, me neither.
But anyway, yeah, I mean... Because I think I felt that the two classic, well, not the two Clásicos, the multiple Clásicos this season were good, but compared to Clásicos in the past, like we've touched on this before, this isn't.
Can I be? Yeah, you know, I think Real, to be honest, that we don't know what they're not a team yet. They're still assembling themselves, their identity. They'll be better next year without question. Mm. But Atleti right now they're the team.
Yeah.
That are best suited or matched to Barca,
and also just because of the difference in identities as well with Atleti, even though they're still finding it, I think there is still this like ruggedness to them that is quite like, it's not just blow for blow with Barca Atleti, it is more of a, you know, it's like watching a, I don't know, like I'm trying to think of it in a boxing analogy. Let's say a very tall boxer with a very short one that's very powerful. There you go, I don't know.
Do you know what it reminds me of actually? It reminds me of...
Terrible in boxing.
No, actually it reminds me of Lewis Holyfield, the first fight.
Oh yeah.
When Lennox Lewis basically won with a series of jabs. And all he used was the jab. It was mind-blowing, this performance. It was an absolute, I mean, they call it the sweet science. It was a clinic that he delivered. And watching Barca, that amazing moment when you see them just on the edge of that box, trying to play the 1-2, and Messi, oh my goodness. There was a period towards the end of the game, still at 0-0, where Messi plays his give and goes.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely hammering. I don't think we actually understand as football watchers, Messi, in order to make space in front of the Atleti, I mean, that is the most contested real estate in world football. I mean, that is like, that's the equivalent of downtown Mitre in Berlin. Like that is the most contested. That's the most, everyone wants to be there, right?
I was going
to
say Manhattan.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, it's Manhattan. Right. Exactly. Perfect.
When you can buy the space above the building.
The gap in front. I love the analogy. That gap in front of the Atleti back four is basically like Manhattan, right? It's the most contested. Everyone's in there. Everyone wants to be in it. And Messi, the room he was finding, he hit this 1-2. He played this 1-2, got the ball back off. I'm not sure who, and then hammered it. And Oblak made a good save low down. And I remember thinking, there's nobody else in world football that could execute that. Mm.
Actually, now you brought him up, we need to talk about Jan Oblak.
Oh my goodness.
This guy is superhuman. He was unbelievable on the weekend.
He anticipated so much. He saw so much.
And actually, I think that goes to highlight how good those two Barca finishes had to be to get past him.
Right.
Because the first one from Suarez is...
Unbelievable.
It's very similar to Messi's free kick against Villarreal. So it's the only place Oblak can't get to it.
Absolutely. Using the defender as a screen.
And then the Messi one.
Was out of this world.
That was like, if it was in basketball, for example, good D, got to your spot.
It was a crossover.
Just the guy just did him.
It was basically a crossover. Like the way, it's so funny. I've been doing something recently, watching Messi highlights on YouTube, where if you...
Lucky you.
For work purposes.
Oh yeah, quote unquote.
When you watch Messi highlights on YouTube, what's really fascinating is every now and again you see a highlight or a skill you haven't seen before. And you know, it's so funny. I get sent the wrong way. I'm at my computer watching it and I actually go the wrong way. I'm like, I'm literally swerving. I almost fell off my seat.
I mean, the thing about the last goal and actually the Suarez goal as well, because it was Messi who broke, right?
Yeah.
Is that this Atleti defense is one of the best in world football.
Yeah.
Really. And usually they have the ability to kind of like, in a footballing sense, like strangle teams, just like shut them down, done. I have never seen anyone stick Atleti on skates like Messi running at a back four. And there was a couple of times where it was for the first and the second goal that they just didn't know where to go. It was like they were scrambling on ice, you know.
And it's,
and like, someone like Godin as well, who is, if you look from the angle behind the goal for Messi's goal, everyone's in a pretty decent position.
Yeah.
This is the problem with Lionel Messi, is that he's the only, well, he's not the only player, but I think that he's the only player that doing enough isn't enough. If that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I know there's very few other players I compare to that. I actually could put Eden Hazard in that category.
Absolutely.
And do you know why? The category I'm going to put them in is a very specific one. Leo Messi and Eden Hazard and one or two others in the world, and I can't think immediately who they are.
Do you know who is a guy who can do this, actually? It's Mo Salah.
Yes. Okay, and the thing I'm going to use is, the category is this. Players who can run at a defence without a plan.
Yeah.
you know, because most players will need backup. You know, I'm looking at the 1-2. Who am I going to like? I've got an attack here. How do I deconstruct the back four in front of me? Hazard, Messi, Ronaldinho in the old days, and Salah now are good enough to run full pelt at the centre of a defence and work out as they go.
Yeah,
on
it's,
the
like,
flight,
it's like make your move. Make your move and then I'll go.
Ronaldinho said, it was a great quote, I can't remember the interview. They're like, how do you choose what to do when they're to the box? He said, well, I make up my mind at the last minute because if I don't know, the defence will not know. And the confidence to be able to adjust. So Messi obviously, you know, drives towards the box. A good tackle comes in and Messi pivots. So spins around, gets himself back in position. And then the disguise, the head fake, Oblak, everyone's waiting for the far, you know, everyone's seen Messi do it 1,000 times. He angles into the far corner. Yeah. Everyone's seen it. And he goes back across. And
very clever.
The ankle snap. If you see the way the ball enters the net, Oblak is just like, you can just see him like,
yeah,
hey, you got
me. I mean, I was talking to Sid about this on the last podcast. Sometimes you just got a Paul Lopez it. You know, when Messi did that chip against Betis, yeah, and Paul just kind of goes,
well, Real Sociedad, Real Sociedad.
Puffs his cheeks out and it's like, what do you expect me to do? And
the kick in the 4-2 last season when he hits over the wall and the goalkeeper just goes,
What do you expect? Sometimes, this is the thing, right? I think that, I can't remember if it was, it might have been Kevin Williams posted about it on Twitter actually saying we need to stop criticising this Barca team and realise how good they are. And I think at the moment in football, there's such a need to assess every little thing from a kind of negative standpoint, like what they could have done better, what they did wrong, what so-and-so needs to do and all this kind of stuff, that actually these are unbelievable football players. And sometimes
I think Valverde is
just
brilliant.
Do amazing stuff.
I think Valverde is brilliant.
I think he's brilliant.
He is.
Well.
I think he's that, like,
I mean,
I
we've just, spoken about yeah, him before yeah, on here before. With the Berlin Valverde fan club.
the Berlin chapter. I've got the analogy for Messi's goal against Oblak. I was rewatching, so I'm really sad. That Western Tombstone.
Oh.
Doc Holliday.
Okay.
Doc Holliday at the very end against Johnny Ringo in the shootout and the gunslingers. And basically, he's just too fast. Messi is just too quick on the draw. And Johnny Ringo just knows.
Anyone under 25, I do believe that Tombstone is now on Netflix.
Hey, listen, Val Kilmer should have got some kind of Oscar nod for that. But anyway, that's Messi, that's Barca, that's Atleti.
Are we going to talk about Diego? What a silly boy. I mean, the thing about Diego Costa is that he doesn't have a great time at the Nou Camp at all. And Atleti nearly got away with it. If you know, it took Barcelona till what, the 85th minute before they scored their first. But still, getting sent off in, what was it, 28th minute?
I mean, there's very few teams in world football that you put your money on them actually having a better chance of winning when they get the 10 men. But having said that, I mean, Diego Costa, having said that, he's had a weird time in Atleti's biggest games.
And well,
a
this
really
is it.
Ill-fated like, time.
I mean, his biggest strength is also his biggest weakness.
Yeah.
And I think that this is where, I mean, the actual reaction to the red card, I found a little bit gross. Just the surrounding of the ref and how, I don't know, it seemed like it was going to go a little bit nasty. Yeah. I mean, it was a bit uncomfortable to
and
watch.
And Simeone couldn't look at Costa when he walked off.
Well, I think that is when you know that you've really done it. Because if you get sent off for doing something that maybe goes over the line a little bit, but you're kind of, your mind is in the right place for it, or you're coming at it from the right intentions, let's say. You know, if you don't get a pat on the bum from Simeone when you get sent off, you know that you've...
You're in big trouble.
Yeah. And
he would have set up that game plan so carefully.
Yeah.
He's finally got the team he wants out there. You know, everything's... Yeah, it's grim.
So, I mean, if Atleti had won, they would have cut the gap to 5 points. It's now 11. 7 games to go.
Stick a fork in it.
Should we do a little quick dart around the Liga before we move on?
Let's go for it.
I would like to big up Mr. Iago Aspas.
Unbelievable.
Who is single-handedly dragging Celta Vigo to safety.
It's mind-blowing.
It is absolutely mind-blowing. Do you know what? Instead of us kind of like trying to do it justice, go to Sid Lowe's Twitter. He wrote a really great thread about this on the weekend after the Celta Vigo.
And there's
Vigo
a great essay he's done as well about this.
Yeah, he did a really great piece for The Guardian last week. It's unbelievable. Celta won. They're now out of the relegation zone. 2 points clear. Villarreal lost to Betis. So they're still in the relegation zone. Santi.
He missed the last minute penalty.
Do you want to tell me what you were telling me before we came on?
Oh, yeah. So Villarreal lost 2-1 to Betis. Santi Cazorla gets a last minute penalty and it's a poor penalty down the middle and the keeper effectively almost catches it. And then at 2-1 down, Betis break. And the guy goes around, the keeper gets the ball past him. And who clears the ball off the line? Santi Cazorla clears off the line. Even though he was despondent, he still got back and cleared it. And then there's this heartbreaking video someone posted on Twitter. He's standing in the corridor, I think it's the player's exit, and people are walking past and saying hello to him or goodbye and hugging him, consoling him, and he's just in tears.
This makes me so upset.
It was inconsolable. And this is the thing, Santi Cazorla, he doesn't just love football. He is football. He is football and he cares so much, and nobody is ever going to hold him accountable for anything. If Villarreal do go down, it's a systemic failure.
Well, this is what me and Sid were talking about on the podcast last week. He shouldn't have even been playing this much at this level this season. A couple of years ago, it was the priority was getting him to be able to walk around the garden with his children again.
Right.
Let alone being able to try and be the
Raquel, you know,
the main guy bring. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like what he's done this season is absolutely phenomenal, and footballers miss penalties.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly.
You know, I can't watch a sad Santi Cazorla. I just can't do it.
It's wrong. Something's wrong in the universe. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'm gone if I do that. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. Yeah.
Actually, I need to compose myself. So we could take a quick break.
So, let's do it.
I've got myself together now.
Have you?
Yeah, just about. I just can't think about Santi being sad.
It's too much. It's too much. Emotions.
Santiago, I love you. Where should we go?
Italy, maybe?
Italy?
No, because like Juventus and in Milan. Only very quickly, because it's really funny, because after this whole controversy, I want to say this now, because Juve beat Milan 2-1. Who scored the winner? Moyes Keane scored the winner. Who basically screwed up for Milan's goal? Bonucci couldn't play out from the back. I mean, it was like a morality. Like
who would have thunk it?
Yeah. Bonucci tries to play out from the back, gets dispossessed. Milan score. Keane scores the winner with like 7 minutes to go. Who is one of the first people to arrive on the scene to celebrate?
Let me have a guess. Is it Leo?
Leapt into his arms. I mean, the man looked like he was doing the high jump. He leapt. He pole vaulted. And the funny thing, I was like, this is good for the cameras. This is good for the cameras. And I was like, your bacon has been saved, my brother. But Keane was cool. He just styled it out. Keane was cool.
Very impressive young man.
Very impressive young man. So yeah, 2-1 Juve.
Yeah. I mean, I just wish he didn't play for Juve.
Yeah. I mean, it won't be the first
game
time.
Game in at Arsenal. Oh, actually, no, he won't play because we've got Aubameyang.
It won't be the first time an immigrant has bailed out the indigenous population. So Where next?
Should we go to Der Klassiker?
Oh my goodness. Okay, well, you were there.
I was there.
How was it? How was the experience of just being in Munich? Was it your first time there?
Not in Munich, but it was my first time at the Allianz Arena.
How was that?
It was great. It was a lovely day. I wrote a piece for the Rabona site, which is up now, called the 17-Minute Klassiker, which kind of basically is...
Oh, a great piece. I have to say I'm biased, but I think it's a terrific piece of writing.
Oh, thanks, dude. But yeah, I mean, it's really strange because you come off the U-Bahn and you kind of take...
The U-Bahn, so the underground.
Sorry. So you kind of come up the stairs and then you turn right and you go past some scarves and stuff for sale, and then you kind of just catch a glimpse of it in the distance, the Allianz Arena.
It's gleaming.
It's
structure.
Just this big, and it was a beautiful sunny day. So you just have this big, almost like from a distance, it's featureless. It's just this big white blob on the top of a hill. It kind of looks like, you know, when you see like those kind of sci-fi films and like some kind of vessel has crashed or is just like hovering.
Right.
And you don't know what they're going to do. It kind of looks like that a little bit because it's all these like paths that lead up to
Is it intimidating, do you think? Could it be intimidating for a team arriving there? Or?
I mean, not really. Probably not if you kind of come in on a coach and you go under the ground and stuff. I don't think so. It's because it's very open to get there. I would imagine that it's more intimidating to go to stadiums that are, you know, on narrow streets or
boxed in,
yeah, you know, you're getting
Upton Park type vibes,
pelted by bottles of Ribena like at Anfield or something,
yeah,
like.
Of course. River Plate or Boca Juniors,
but yeah, I mean, the build up was incredible. It was, the whole game was very loud, especially the first 20 minutes. It was so loud. I can't remember a game that I've been at that's been that loud for a while. But yeah, I mean, the game itself wasn't really much of a game. It was kind of done after 17 minutes, hence the title of the piece. First 5 minutes, Dortmund barely touched the ball. It was like watching Pep era Bayern.
High
just
tempo.
Just that swagger, first at every ball. Kind of said it in the piece, but it had an air of this, you know, like an elder sibling kind of keeping the younger one in check a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Being like, you know, maybe the younger one's acted up a little bit. And it's like, no, watch
grim.
It kind of thing.
It was grim.
It was a bit grim.
Who was running the show?
Thiago was brilliant.
He's a magician, isn't he?
Yeah. Serge Gnabry was great. Kingsley Coman was great. Thomas Muller was great. Lewandowski was all right. I mean, he scored two goals, 200th and 201st Bundesliga goals.
Oh my goodness.
But the thing is, Dortmund's only chance and their best chance, really, well, not their only chance, but their best chance for sure, came at 0-0. And De Hood hit the post on 6 minutes where he really should have scored.
It was a very presentable chance, wasn't it?
It was right in front of me, and it was just one of those. You know when you kind of know a goal is going to happen, you can see it three or four passes before or a couple of seconds before. It's like, oh, this is in. And when it went wide, you could tell by the reaction.
It was off the post.
And then went wide. And Sancho's hands were on his head. Brun Larsen like dropped to his knees, and I think that kind of summed it up because they had so little of the ball in the first 5 minutes. I mean, obviously, it's very easy to go back and say, "Oh, that was the chance," but it really
felt like that.
And then Mats Hummels scored the first. Lewandowski got the second after a poor error from Zagadou. And once that second one went in, it was like, "This is done. This is totally done." And actually, from a spectacle point of view, it was really disappointing because Dortmund were never in the game.
Disappointing. You know, the thing about this is it's so disappointing because we're huge fans of Sancho Corner and Dortmund on this podcast. But unfortunately, you look at that squad, you look at the Dortmund players, and none of them have ever really been, apart from the exception of Reus and Piszczek, they haven't won things at a high level. They're new, they're young, and that has really shown. If you look at the Bayern team by contrast, Hummels and Müller were on the pitch for the absolute battering, you know, Germany-Brazil. And there are some parallels with Germany-Brazil, I think. Brazil, a young team, hadn't really won, don't have that sort of leadership structure. And Germany, just, you know, tournament experience, and just came in and just...
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I think it's a mixture of things. I think it's obviously the realities that that Dortmund face compared to Bayern. You know, Dortmund don't have the budget. They almost have to rely on or assume that they're not going to keep players for a long time. There's a really good thing that BT Sport did actually over the weekend, which was kind of the Dortmund project or something like that. And it had interviews with some of the top brass at Dortmund going back to when they nearly went bankrupt after they won the Champions League in the 90s, and how they have to, you know, Michael Zorc was talking about, the sporting director was talking about their process, and they know now that they don't have the time to build teams anymore because their players often just go.
Yeah. But if you look at the way those players arrived, Dembele from Rennes to Dortmund, stepping stone. And I hate to say, even, you know, Pogba, yes, he did love United, but stepping stone. I mean, when he came from Le Havre, United basically poached him. Mm. You know, it's when you have a player that comes into the club who doesn't stay much other places, the same with Flamini. There's players who you are part of their career ascension. Hazard as well. It's maybe a surprise Hazard's been at Chelsea as long as he's been. But there should always be a sense with certain players that they will move on. You don't get that with some players. You know, a player like Ander Herrera has been more of a loyalist. Mm. But players like Pogba and Dembele and Hazard, you can see in their future, there is a new camp, there is a Bernabeu. Gareth Bale as well as a classic example.
Yeah, definitely. At Dortmund, they're in this really unique position where they are the next best team in Germany to Bayern, and they are expected to compete, but the goalposts are so different to Bayern. Like, whereas if you look in the Premier League, the top three or four have similar budgets available to them, for example, where it is like one and then the rest in
I just
in
want someone like N'Golo Kante to go to Dortmund.
I think he'd be the perfect example of a player who would really thrive there because he's won the World Cup, he's won the league he's won the Premier League, and I would totally see him being like that kind of guy who wants
now
to guide that to these players.
Because you know he'd be like a club legend.
Oh, 100%.
N'Golo Kante to Dortmund. Oh my goodness.
Start the petition.
Start the petition.
And they have to debate it.
Yeah.
It but I mean, yeah, I think the thing is with Dortmund is that their whole thing is that, you know, I mean, we're saying stuff that everyone probably knows, but like Michael Zorc was saying that, you know, you start your career here. We give the players the chance to start their careers here.
Yes.
For them, it must be really frustrating knowing that you are going to lose these players anyway, but then when that time frame is reduced massively in cases of like Dembele and et cetera, then it must be so infuriating. But, you know, he said we were very well compensated for it, which they got for it. It was great. Yeah, same.
It's almost an Ajax level turnover. But the beauty of the Dembele thing is the reinvestment of that money. What I love now is that really feeds the infrastructure and the grassroots of the club and the sustainability.
Yeah.
And it's just keeping an eye on the prize. And what I love about the fact that Zorc is there, Zorc is such an old school, you know,
he's been
there in 97.
Yeah.
And he's a Don.
Yeah, definitely.
Having an administration that, and I say this as a United fan, that absolutely love the club and for whom it is football first.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is what they've done really well, I think, is they've built the club to be a global club whilst keeping very strictly to the principles of what they would have done anyway. Do you know what I mean? like an identity. Like, we want to play this way, or we want players that play this way, or we want to build our club in this kind of fashion. And actually, with that, the thing I think that was so impressive about the game on the weekend, at 4-0 down at half time, the Dortmund away fans were just as noisy as they were pre-game throughout the entire second half. And at 5-0, Lewandowski scored right at the end. The game finished 5-0, and the players came over and they were applauding them like normal. There wasn't any, which maybe you would say, well, actually, maybe the fans should be expecting more or doing this. But I thought that it's kind of like there's a reality that's set in at 2-0, and it was like, well, there's no point in us kind of adding to it, you know.
But also, these players, and they've been on a particular journey with these fans. This particular team has had so many great stories and plots, and I think the fans are grateful for that. And my one concern, my one hope, is that this doesn't hurt them historically. I hope that Dortmund will see this result as the way that when United got beaten 5-0 by Newcastle and still won the league, they have to treat it as, you know what, elite teams on a run will destroy you. It happens to all of us. And the great teams know how to absorb horrific defeat. I mean, United, we lost 6-3 and 5-0 in consecutive weeks.
Yeah.
Still won the league in 97.
I mean, the thing about this side now is that they're just way ahead of schedule. They shouldn't be in this position anyway, really. I mean, the amount of injuries they've had this season, they've rushed a load of people back. Like, Zagadou wasn't fully fit. Lukas Piszczek wasn't fully fit. Zagadou came off at halftime. He had a really poor first half, but you could just tell he wasn't fully fit. But also, he's 19.
Yeah.
Jadon Sancho is 19 years old. You know, you've got Marco Reus, who's the most experienced player in that side, who has had multiple injury ravaged seasons. You don't have these players there really like a, let's for argument's sake, like say someone like N'Golo Kante went there and he's like, right guys, when we were at Leicester, this and this.
God, I want that to happen so badly.
I know, you know, or like when we won the World Cup.
Yeah. They need someone who is like, they just need to get someone who has done it. They need to get someone who is basically like, you know, who's done it. You know, like when Ajax basically brought in Danny Blind.
Yeah.
That was the most beautiful signing because he'd just seen it.
Yeah.
And Rijkaard, I mean, that was, the midfield basically. I mean, not everyone can call those players, but Rijkaard and Danny Blind shut the thing down.
But I mean, you know, they're still only a point behind.
Exactly.
So I think that the main thing is, you know, Lucien Favre said after the game, it was a lesson. We can't think of the champion. We can't think of the, you know, winning the championship. We have to think about next game, next game, next game.
Yep.
And I think this has maybe given them a bit of a, because they've been riding their luck a little bit for weeks now.
They have.
And I think this has been a wake up call, and it can go, it's a massive cliche, it can go one of two ways. They can learn from this. One thing I do want to talk about is the press conference after the game.
Oh yeah, go on.
Niko Kovac, wouldn't mind playing for that guy.
Absolutely nails, isn't he?
Berlin boy, born in Wedding.
Not just any old Berlin. Listen, those who know Berlin, when we talk about Wedding is the real deal. Love it.
He kind of went after the journalist a little bit, which I thought was really good. So in Germany, people who may not know, in the Bundesliga, the managers do the press conferences together. So they're either sat next to each other or there's someone in between them. I think depending on how the game goes. So when I went to see Hertha Dortmund, it was a little bit feisty and the guy sat in between. But on the weekend, Niko Kovac sat next to Lucien Favre. And a journalist asked Niko Kovac something like, does the 5-0 mean something more personally for you because of the criticism you received this season? And he kind of was a little bit short with them, but, you know, kind of answered how you would expect him to answer. And then the same guy followed up again with this question, which was like, you know, you said you weren't going to celebrate too much, but, you know, the player's going to be able to go out, or, you know, they're going to go and celebrate or have a party or something. And he basically just went full, like...
Full Kovac. Full Wedding.
It was... Yeah, he basically just kind of went after them and said, like, what are we doing here? We're playing football. It doesn't matter what the players want to do. Some might want to go out, some might not want to go out, but we're playing football here. And we don't even, he said, absolutely now, I don't get asked about things in the game. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose, sometimes we make mistakes, sometimes we don't make mistakes, but it's always sensationalism. You want to ask about whether the players are going out and partying and stuff like that. And he really went after him to the point where this was only 8 minutes into the press conference. And it was like, any more questions? Silence. And actually, when they got up, Lucien Favre kind of shook his hand and just went, well said. What I found really nice about that situation was that there's clearly a massive respect between Kovac and Favre.
Yeah, it's a and peer it's, group.
Yeah.
And he said, actually, didn't he say, he said, look, not just me, but also my colleagues.
Yeah.
So it's like our fraternity of football managers. We're just here to be, you know, this generation of football managers, they're actually very, they're regular dudes, like Nagelsmann. They're good. They're just geeks. They're just trying to coach football clubs.
And I thought that was really good. He was just like, yeah, not just me. Like you said, like, we're all kind of sick of these kind of questions. Like, you know, ask us about the football.
I loved that.
It was really, really good, actually. Like you said before we started recording, it was something that the players see. He's kind of like, I don't care what they do. Like, if they go out or they don't go out. You know, it's like they've just won a game. They've got like a few days till the next game. It's like, don't worry about it.
You know, it's almost like, he's almost like, you know, we said this before, like, you're communicating with a different audience.
Yeah.
You're talking to the journalists, but you're really speaking to the football world.
Yeah.
What was fascinating was, you know, there's that respect, but obviously, like, managers talk, and we don't often get that sense that managers will have a chat at the conferences, you know, away from the eyes of the media. And can I say this as well? That question is so loaded with class assumptions. That thing about, you know, the fact is there are going to be, there'll be some Bayern supporters, some Dortmund supporters among those journalists. They're happy to go back and have a beer and celebrate. They're going to enjoy this incredible victory, right? These Bayern supporting journalists. But it's not okay for your players, the ones who've elevated your club, the ones you make a living off, frankly, because if there were no players, you wouldn't have a career.
Yeah,
and exactly. I sometimes feel, I'm not saying journalists should be deferential, but I say they should be respectful. Like, these are people carrying out a specialist skill in front of millions of people, you know, on TV every week, and respect them. Like, yes, they're being paid tens of thousands of euros a week, which is what this comes down to, really. What they're really saying is wealthy people that grew up from working class backgrounds shouldn't be allowed to live it up. That's what they're really saying. And also there's another element there, which is the kind of, let's be brutally honest, trying to return Bayern to the FC Hollywood years because that was more fun to report on.
Yeah, and I just don't think Kovac has any interest
in
that
because
happening.
He loves Bayern because he's old school. Like, he's been through that infrastructure. He loves the infrastructure. He loves the club. He probably saw that and was like, that was the worst aspect of Bayern.
Yeah.
And he wants no part of it.
But it's easy to forget, I think, with everything that's gone on this season. And he has been criticised Niko Kovac a lot this season. But I think you're seeing now that a lot of that was completely unfair because this is a football guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, was assistant at Red Bull Salzburg, was a Croatia manager, saved Eintracht Frankfurt from relegation, and then turned them into top of the table,
a wonderful
European competitors. They are unbeaten since the winter break now, Eintracht Frankfurt. And I don't think that that's any coincidence that they have improved because of the work Niko Kovac did there. So coming into a club like Bayern, and you've seen it with like Pep, when Pep first went there, it was a little bit wild. And then when Pep went to Man City that first season, how many people in the Premier League, how many journalists were like, this guy's a joke. Can't hack it in the Premier League. And it's like, let them do their work. This takes time.
Yeah. And what he's done with Serge Gnabry, I mean, you look at like the player development.
Well, this is the thing. You look at the two players that started on the weekend on the wings were Kingsley Coman, who's now back fit, and Serge Gnabry, both in their early 20s, both the future of Bayern. He has seamlessly, really, if you think about it, maybe they could have done better in Europe for sure, but he's now embedded those two as the guys to take over from Robin and Ribery.
And in Europe, to be fair to him as well, he was playing against a Liverpool team that is fine-tuned. A Liverpool team that has solved all its problems.
Essentially, even though it's absurd to say because Bayern won six straight Bundesligas, but in terms of the Champions League, they're kind of where Liverpool were maybe two seasons ago because
I agree,
they're still kind of going through that process of figuring stuff out. And anyway, I mean, Bayern are now top by a point. There's six games to go. So
all still to play for.
All still to play for. And absolutely, like, both teams have tricky last games as well. Yeah. Bayern are at home to Eintracht Frankfurt.
Ooh.
And Dortmund are away to Mönchengladbach, who both teams who might need to win to...
You know, actually, I've got more faith in Gladbach have been...
Oh, well, the thing is, Eintracht haven't lost in any competition since the winter break. Gladbach, I think, have only won one of their last eight league games. So,
yeah, great.
I mean, but still, going to Gladbach on the last day of the season, say, for example, is there's a point in it on the last day of the season and Dortmund have to win in Gladbach.
Yeah.
You wouldn't fancy that.
Exactly.
And, you know, they've still got Schalke to play at home in a couple of weeks, Dortmund, and they haven't beat Schalke at home in the league, I think, since 2015.
Oh, goodness.
So, you know, but then Bayern dropped points at Freiburg, so
Exactly.
You just never know. You just never know. But let's take another quick break and then we'll come back and do a wrap up of the other stuff.
Yeah, FA Cup, yeah.
We've got to do the FA Cup. We haven't even talked about the FA Cup yet.
So much football.
Right, we're back from the break. We haven't even spoke about the FA Cup. Now is the time.
Now is the time. The time is now.
First of all, we need to shout out Brighton, because that looked like when Man City scored after a few minutes at the beginning, I thought that was going to be a sad day.
Poor Brighton. The fan base, unbelievable. I actually had a very good friend of mine was at the game. Jonathan Harding, fantastic writer, big Brighton fan, so shout out, John. And the fans were in superb voice throughout. And the frustrating thing with the FA Cup is it's just where you see the inequality of resources.
Yeah.
It's so frustrating. And City have gone now to the final. They are still in all four competitions. They're still in contention, all four competitions. And we shouldn't say too much about City, frankly, because they do what they do. Brighton did so well to get to that stage. And the other semi-final, by contrast, was an absolute thriller, an old school thriller. And Watford coming through 3-2. And so much to say about that. The primary thing is a lot of people are going, oh, it would have been a lot better to have Wolves in the final than City. I disagree. I think that Wolves, they're basically like a Man City in terms of tactical awareness, but they don't have the players. So actually, they're an easier quantity to deal with. The draw that Wolves got at against City, they relied a lot on brilliance of the goalkeeper.
Watford, who didn't play on the weekend.
Watford are chaotic. And in an FA Cup final where anything can happen, you could have a Man City Wigan situation.
I would be interested in who they start in goal, Watford, in the final. Because Radio Gomez has been their cup keeper.
Mm.
But Ben Foss has been their best players this season.
Yeah, but you know what Ferguson would do, though? Alex Ferguson, he'd stick with Gomez.
Yeah, well, Arsene Wenger did that a lot with Arsenal as well, knowing that players, you know, Szczesny played a cup final before he left. Fabianski played a cup final before he left.
You just make the hard choices, don't you?
It's a weird one. It's funny because that's why we're not football managers.
Wolves are obviously a fine team, but what, two mistakes? Well, actually, they made one mistake, actually, because the Deulofeu goal, no one made a mistake for that. That is just a sensational finish. And if you see I think Wolves are 2-0 up with, 10 minutes to go. And Deulofeu, the way he hits this curler, I love the way he leaves his foot hanging, like the follow through.
Yeah,
like a jump
maximum
shot.
But it's like a leg break in cricket.
Yeah, it was like the follow through at the end of a jump shot to get the rotation.
Yeah.
And it just, the way it floats. It was like Coutinho style.
It was really good.
Oh, it was glorious.
It was like a goal you only really see in training.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? And then, of course, Deeney scored the equaliser penalty. You had to wait 2 minutes to take it. 94th minute equaliser. And then Deulofeu scores a brilliant goal, give and go.
But, such a good game. And do you know what? I'm really, really pleased for Harry Gratz here.
Yeah, because me too.
When he came to England, all of the people who were aware of his work in Spain said that this was a good appointment for Watford. You know, he's been very highly regarded everywhere he's been. And again, another example of how things take time.
The first World Cup. First World Cup.
Wow, he is good.
Wow, Watford won the World Cup final. Leave that in.
West Ham won the World Cup.
You have to leave that in. Watford's first FA Cup final since 84?
Yeah, long, long time.
Wild.
I mean, amazing. I mean, sorry, Man City fans, but it would have been so great if Brighton had been there. Brighton, Watford in the World Cup. Now you've got me doing it. Brighton, Watford in the World Cup final.
That would have been the finalists of 83 and 84, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was so good.
That's how I feel about it. I think the funny thing with this game, and there's an element of sadness, there's something poignant about this game, Watford winning in brilliant style, but I also felt a bit sad because I look at a player like Deulofeu and I think to myself, I would say this without sounding like a patronising, dude, what are you doing? You were the chosen one. You're meant to be like with Thiago. You're meant to be, see the way that Thiago's running games for Bayern.
Mm.
You're meant to be running games somewhere. You're meant to be Dembele. That was meant to be you. Really, like you were meant to be the guy that was combining with Messi, the next generation of the Barca forward line. Like you see that game and you think, you know, it's brilliant what you're doing. But you came off the bench. And a lot of people said, and they criticised the manager, why wasn't he starting? Why did these clubs get rid of him? And people replying and going, you don't watch them every week. He doesn't do this every week. He doesn't play like this every week. Like he has to come off the bench because he's an impact player. And I just feel really sad. Does that make sense? Not in a patronizing way, but in a kind of like, you should be running games for the very best teams in the world every week. And well, it's not for lack of talent.
Well, I always think of that thing that Ander Herrera said in situations like this about how important decision-making is in football. You can have all the ability in the world And if your decision making isn't as good as it can be, you're not going to be there. And that's the difference. And that's the difference. And it's essentially, it's like I've, you know, seen a huge amount of players that, like Deulofeu, come through Arsenal over the last decade, for example, who on their day are unplayable, but on other days, you literally can't play them.
I'm going to be such a spoil sport here. So Ben Arthur, Hatem Ben Arthur, scored this goal for Rennes at the weekend. Everyone's going nuts about it on social media. I was watching that, and I remember thinking, when I saw it, I thought, he must be an absolute nightmare to play with because you don't know when he's going to release it. He goes past three or four men, but if you look at the players standing around, how many times he'll play the square pass? And I'll sound like a real curmudgeon, but in the course of a season, that is not a sustainable enterprise. And that's why players like that, or like, you know, Laurent Robert is another one, they don't, or, you know, or Ricardo Quaresma, these players had everything technically, but it's all cliche with the first yard being in the head. You have to make the pass before the gap closes. Mm. And some players don't make the pass because they don't have the confidence. It's not like Andre Gomes, brilliant player, went to Barca, could make the pass, as we saw in the Clásico, you know, when Messi scores the late winner, can make the reverse pass into space, but it's confidence. Deulofeu's case, almost, can I say this? It's almost like they collide with reality at a certain age because they've been the best player in their category for so many years. You've been the best player at the youth level, and then you start training with the first team, and all of a sudden,
it's the same with Bojan. You look at Bojan, who's, again, like when he came, I mean, he's had injuries and stuff, so it's been a little bit different. But when he first came through at Barcelona, you were like, oh my God.
Bojan's now, a funny one. Bojan's a weird one. Bojan's more like, sorry to jump in, but there's an essay about Bojan, the interview that he gives, and you realise why he didn't go that far. And it's not actually the technique. It's more the, I think he's just not brutal. He's not mentally ruthless.
Yeah.
So
he's too nice. Too nice.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think he's more of a Morata category.
Yeah, definitely.
Where the talent's there, but...
But yeah. You mentioned Andre Gomes there. Should we look back at the first edition of the Super Catfish Road?
Oh, the Catfish Derby.
Right, so I sent you a message.
How do we get away with this?
Congratulations to Evan. Thoroughly deserved one.
So who are the two catfishes then playing?
Well, this was the Super Catfish Show. If you, I'll read out the Wikipedia entry. The Super Catfish Show is a fixture between Everton and Arsenal.
The two clubs that flattered it. So catfish basically is some.
Well, you coined the catfish thing.
Did so. I? Did I?
Oh, wasn't
it you?
Credit where it's due.
So I tried to escape. They're going to come for us.
Don't put this on me. So Everton, I came up with the Super Catfish. I'll take credit for that.
So Everton beat Arsenal 1-0 in the Catfish Derby. A worrying result for Arsenal. Not one that I saw come. I thought it would be a draw, I think, this one.
I said it would be an Everton win. I've seen this game a million times.
Can be honest, though, playing, I mean, a result at Goodison Park is always a pretty tough thing to get.
It isn't, because that's the very nature of the Super Catfish Show. You just never know. I sent you a message saying, if a club that you considered a catfish turns out to be a catfish, were they ever a catfish at all?
That's brilliant. Yeah.
I'm going to put that in the Rabona fortune cookies when we make them.
It's so good. It's so good. It's so good.
But isn't it? Because it's like Everton could have won 8-0. They could have been 8-0 up if it wasn't for Bernd Leno and some poor finishing. Bernd Leno, by the way, who has quietly had an extremely impressive season at Arsenal. Player of the month last month, I do believe. Mm. And kept Arsenal in the game when they really didn't deserve to be in the game. Arsenal still without an away clean sheet in the league this season. The only side to have not got a clean sheet away in the league. And yeah, Arsenal were extremely poor, but I think that was mainly because Everton were extremely impressive. Prediction-wise, it doesn't really matter too much because we all had Arsenal outside the top four anyway. But yeah, considering four of Arsenal's last six games are away from home and they have to go to Watford and Wolves as well.
Nobody fancies those trips.
Arsenal are going to have to really pull something out of the bag. So yeah, congratulations to Everton on the first edition of the Super Catfish Show.
Yeah, absolutely. And Liverpool had a great win, a late win. A couple of days before that, so the top of the league is looking interesting anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to shout out to my mate Rob, Southampton fan, our resident Southampton listener.
Oh yeah, yeah, Rob.
He was so angry for Southampton's second half performance because they took the lead. I said to him, I thought Southampton would win, and then when Southampton went ahead, he sent me a text saying, "Oh my god!" And I was just like, "Don't test me." And then it was like, "Oh, 3-1. Yep, all right, fair play." So yeah. We tried to get through as much football as we could do. Before we move on to questions, one more thing I want to mention. So England lost to Canada on Friday?
In the women's.
It was Friday, right?
Yeah.
Christine Sinclair scored the winner. Christine Sinclair, 5 goals away from becoming the outright top international goal scorer of all time. She has 180 goals in 279 matches.
Whoa. That's like, point 9, 18 over 27. I don't know.
I'll tell you, one sec. I mean, she's four behind Abby Wambach. Abby Wambach got 184 goals in 256 games. So Abby Wambach, this is incredible, right? So I was looking at the ratios when it happened on Friday. Abby Wambach's goals per game ratio for, 2001 to 2015, so is that, 16 years inclusive, is 0.72 goals per game.
That's insane.
For over a decade and a half.
That's wild. What's the equivalent? That's like 25, 30 points a game in the NBA or whatever. Women's NBA. It's nuts.
It's absolutely otherworldly.
7 and 10 for 15 years.
I mean, Christine Sinclair, her 180 goals has come in 279 games, which is still 0.66.
That's nuts. I can't. You're always scoring. And to do that across the amount of travel, the amount of consistency, the, you know, the injuries year in, year out. Sorry, that's wild.
I can't. Like, some of the ratios in this list are just unbelievable. So, Julie Fleeting, ex Arsenal forward, got 116 international goals and 120 caps for Scotland, 0.97.
That's absolutely wild. That is absolutely wild.
But anyway, Christine Sinclair could do it in the World Cup. She could do it beforehand.
The consistency of goal scoring.
Yeah, I mean, let's keep an eye on that.
Yeah, for sure. My goodness.
A few questions before we finished, or a couple of questions. Thanks for everyone who sent in their questions at Rabonamag on Twitter. You can also, if you want to send in anything about the podcast, you can email hello@rabonamag.com.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And just put podcast in the title. Feel free to email.
I might email now. If you need
more than 280 characters, feel free to drop us an email. We had a few questions about stuff that we've already covered, actually. So let's have one from Marge Doos. I like this question. What is some of the stuff that really annoys you about football? For me, time wasting is much more infuriating than diving, because at least diving is just one incident, whereas time wasting can occur over the whole course of a game. I sent one back saying, I'm going to go in on this.
Ooh, okay, what do you have? I'm not sure. I've still got to think about this.
Because one thing occurred on the weekend in the Super Catfish show, actually. First few minutes, Lacazette in the box, squares the ball and gets flattened, like taken out. The ball's still in play. Anywhere else on the pitch, that's a foul.
Right.
And also, maybe a yellow card. Nothing happened. And I can't understand this. And this happens time and time and time again in the box. They should 100% be fouls.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think it's almost like they're trying to, it's almost like a sort of Sunday league mentality of like early in the game, don't give the big thing decision to settle the game down.
Yeah, but I mean, this could have happened any time in the game. Yeah, and it wouldn't have been given.
I know. I'm just trying to think of the psychology. That's actually a good, fair objection. Time wasting, to be honest, doesn't annoy me that much, only because it's one of the few ways in which teams which don't have the financial resources of bigger clubs can actually like equal the odds. It's for the same reason that actually I'm not that against tactical fouls. I hate seeing them, but I understand them and they're part of the game. And there's a part of me that when I used to play Sunday League football, I kind of liked the fact that I got fouled off the ball and all that stuff and like got my, because it was kind of like, yeah, it's a compliment. It's also like, it's the rough and tumble.
Do you know what? I'm going to counter you there with I totally agree on the fouling stuff. I hate time wasting. Okay. And actually, there's a really good video that Tifo did about potential rule changes to the clock in football and how much time the ball actually spends in play. I think, I haven't thought this through to the level where I've considered all the options 100%, but like at the moment, I think I would be in favour on less time on the clock for football games, but the clock stopping when the ball goes out of play.
Yeah.
So the ball is actually in play for the same amount of time every single football match. I think I'm in favour of that as opposed to just letting the clock flow.
Do you know, I'm going to sound like a real old fogey here. What really annoys me in football, it's the YouTube. I think it's the people.
It's the YouTube.
That's a really old, oh my God, like an old man ranting at clouds.
Do you know what really annoys me about football?
The YouTube.
It's the YouTube.
It's just the kind of, I slightly worry about this from the perspective of maybe like young players, I don't know. Make the best available decision, like lay off the pass. By all means, beat the player with a spectacular piece of skill, but the best footballers use the spectacular skill when absolutely necessary. So you will, you know, don't by all means use the blinding step over, but very often the give and go is a better option. And I think the thing that worries me sometimes is I see, like, you know, I love the football freestyling stuff. I love it, don't get me wrong. But the best players know exactly when to do it. Ronaldinho is a great example. So I'm not a hate. Everyone loves a great piece of skill. But I remember watching a highlight video on Instagram the other day, and they've got a guy doing all the fancy futsal stuff. And there's one video, and it's brilliant. And to his credit, he posted it up. Everyone else basically is defending this guy, stands like up against him on their heels, and they get murdered. This one guy that defends him is brilliant. The guy just stands side on, like with his heel towards him, but side on and showing him either way, and the guy can't get past.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy basically goes down five different alleys and has to lay it off. And I suppose my one thing with football is now, like, see how Ajax played against Real. That's the football that I think is just, it's a mixture of flair and team play. And my
does
one
does this really annoy you though?
Yeah, because you know what it is? It's because when I see players who are technically out of this world not achieving their potential, very often it's because they haven't integrated themselves into team systems. And so my whole thing is like, I don't want to celebrate too much people who use skill for skill's sake, because they don't end up...
Well, this is why I've historically not found Cristiano Ronaldo as enjoyable to watch as Lionel Messi, because it's the kind of minimalist, maximalist stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing Messi does is for show.
And that's the thing. I sound like an old fogey, but I've started so finished.
We are so miserable.
Yeah, but it's just no. We love it. No, we don't look at us raving over all these games. We do rave over that stuff. We do love it.
We do love football,
and we do love the fancy stuff. Don't get me wrong. It's just like,
oh yeah, I am all for. I mean, this is the Rabona podcast. Yeah.
Like we're literally named after a fancy skill.
Yeah.
John Collins said it best. I interviewed him, and he said, "There's a difference between tricks and moves." He said, "A lot of players have tricks." He said, "But Zinedine Zidane has moves."
Yeah.
Hey, listen, that's what right there. That's Zizi right there, my man.
Yeah, it's like Street Fighter.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And you have to like do the like left to right with the A and B together.
Exactly. That's it. So that's me being.
Hope that answers your question. We had a couple that we've kind of covered, like from Mr. WP in the case of Coutinho. Still have a place at Barca, or should he look somewhere else, or would? Why did Delafoe not make it bigger? So we've kind of had that.
Yeah, yeah.
Coutinho, I'm not 100% sure. If they can get anything like market value for him, I think they might flip him.
I think they should.
G Wright, are you guys sad about what happened between Bayern and Dortmund on Saturday? Brackets, I am. Yeah, we kind of said we wish it would have been more of a spectacle. Oh, this is a good one from William Joseph. Which one is bigger, Espanyol's obsession of Piqué or Madrid media's obsession of Messi?
Espanyol Piqué.
Do you think?
Yeah, do you know why?
I think it's just so, the thing about it, it's so specific. Why?
I think it must be because Real Messi is like, Real will be obsessed with whoever is the big person at Barca. But the Espanyol Piqué is so specific and so local and so bitter. To be honest, I actually, if Espanyol's hate for Piqué could be turned into a spirit, an alcoholic spirit, I'd buy it tomorrow. I'd drink it. I would want to taste the bitterness of that in alcoholic form. Do you know what I love about Espanyol Piqué in that? Messi, I think, slightly hates Espanyol. Yeah. Do you know why? Because what he did to Betis, Paul Lopez was in goal, of course.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is,
Messi never forgets.
Messi carried that beef. What I love is Messi, he doesn't get credit. You know, like franchises move from city to city. Messi kept the beef going with Paul Lopez, because I think that chip, and no one's going to say it, but I think that chip was personal. I know you don't watch Game of Thrones, but Messi is basically Arya Stark. There's an assassin in Game of Thrones who basically has a list of names, and she goes through and she ticks them off one by one. And I think Messi has a list.
Do you know what?
Names.
Next time I get tonsillitis or something like, because I usually get tonsillitis once every 18 months. I have to take a week off. I can't go near anyone. I'll do Game of Thrones. That's how I first watched The Wire, you know. I had tonsillitis and I basically watched the entire 5 seasons of The Wire in a week. Because I was so ill.
Can I say as well, actually, since we're on we all love The Wire on this podcast, but while we're on this, shout out to Gerard Piqué, because just as Santi Cazorla is football, I think Piqué is also football. What I love about Piqué is he's a world-class player. He's, you know, married to a pop star. He's photogenic. He's brilliant. But I love that he's petty. I love that Piqué still has time for the petty play. Because to me, that's the spirit. Like when Messi took off his shirt and celebrated in the Clásico, I remember thinking, that is the most petty, ultra childish, and you're Leo Messi.
But you know, we've spoke about this so many times, and we might have even spoke about it on the podcast, but the thing about that celebration in the Clásico, which for me was so like beautiful in a way, was that, you know, when you see players who aren't really that great and they score and they do the, like, they turn around and they run their thumb over the name on the back of their shirt, and they're like, who's and you're that? Like, yeah, all right, mate.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's your first start, but you've been at the club for 4 years or something. It's like, come on, like, wind it in a little bit. Messi has been doing this relentlessly for like 13 years. And it was that Clásico that he was like, nah, enough.
Yeah.
Shirt off, holds the name. And it's not the turn around and run the like point to your name. It's like, no.
Yeah.
You're going to see this.
I was here. That thing, it was a thing in a Gladiator. When he goes, are you not entertained?
Yeah.
Are you not entertained?
It was, again, minimalist and maximalist. You see the, like, I don't want to compare the two all the time because I know that.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
but
yeah,
there's no ripping your shirt off and flexing. It's just like, no, I still got my undershirt on, so you're not going to see my tummy. Take the shirt off, just look at my name.
Remember, yeah, remember.
And
it was here.
And it was that, we spoke about that guy giving the devil horse side in front of him, which I was like,
If you get a chance to watch that Messi winner against Real, if you find the fan footage from behind the goal, and there's two guys doing the devil horse with their fingers. It's like they're trying to send him back into the underworld.
Oh dear.
Oh,
should we
joy.
Get out of here? We've run extremely long today.
Oh yeah, but it's been a pleasure. Ryan,
it's been so much football.
I know. Always a joy. Can I just say thank you so much, audience, for listening. A real pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for engaging with our work when we discuss stuff that's both off the field and on the field. That means a lot. And yeah, we'll catch you next week.
No, this week.
Oh, this week.
We're going to be back on Thursday.
Okay, yeah, we'll see you. Okay, so we're doing a Champions League podcast, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes, so we'll see you for that. And in the meantime, please find us on all social media handles at Rabona Mag, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Listen.
The
cool.
usual.
Catch you soon.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.